Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 11, 2019. The Times of Israel published my new article, What We Can Learn from the Deadly Attack Outside the Halle Synagogue. The shooting attack near a synagogue in Halle, Germany was yet another dreadful act of anti-Semitism on the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. However, it could have been much worse if the 27-year-old attacker, who identified with the far right, had broken the synagogue's doors and slaughtered the 80 worshippers who were conducting the Yom Kippur prayers. In a video he shot leading up to the shooting, the attacker denied the Holocaust, denounced feminists and immigrants, and stated outright that the root of all these problems is the Jew. Upon news of the two people who were shot to death, condemnations came one after another, from German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas tweeting that shots being fired at a synagogue on Yom Kippur, the festival of reconciliation, hits us in the heart, and we must all act against anti-Semitism in our country, through Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu commenting, for a call on the German authorities to continue taking determined action against anti-Semitism. Among all the cries, prayers and warmth for the victims' families, there is a clear demand for a significant shift to take place against the anti-Semitism that has rapidly spread worldwide. However, other than desperate words, there is an air of helplessness in the face of the growing phenomenon. Helplessness. Desperation. They sound like very undesirable feelings. But could it be that such sensations are actually a positive outcome of the exponentially rising anti-Semitic crimes and threats? Perhaps when we are repeatedly stunned by an irrational phenomenon that has haunted our people for generations, one which makes no differentiation between genders, between Yom Kippur and a weekday, and between synagogues in Berlin and Pittsburgh, then maybe this is what will goad us to look into what the Kabbalists have been trying to tell us for generations. Whether in the Book of Zohar or other Kabbalistic texts, what have the Kabbalists been trying to communicate to the Jewish people? Simply put, if we Jews unite with one another, we invite a positive force dwelling in nature to spread not only among each other, but among all humanity. By awakening nature's positive, unifying force through our unity, we can bring peace to the world. On the contrary, if divided, where every Jew remains within him or herself in his or her own prayers, then we provoke the opposite, hatred and conflict. As Kabbalist Rabbi Yitzhak Isaac Hever wrote, "Creation and choice, correction and destruction of the world, all depends on Israel, Sach Yitzhak." Part 2, Likutim 1. Hours after the deadly shooting attack, German Chancellor Angela Merkel attended a vigil to identify with the victims at a historic synagogue in central Berlin. She stood with the Jewish community as they together sang, "Os Shalom Bimaramaf, make peace in his heaven." Ironically, sometimes the answer to our toughest questions can be found right under our noses. Sometimes we need only open our ears and listen to the words we're singing. Os Shalom Bimaramaf, make peace in his heaven. It means that in our unity and our common prayer, we can make the upper force bring peace above, Yehi Shalom Aleinu, he will bring peace upon us, that is the upper force will bring peace to the whole of humanity, Valkol Yisrael, and upon all of Israel, that is where the role of the people of Israel is to unite, Valkol Yoshvei Tevel, and for all the people in the world, that is our role is not to receive the light of unity for ourselves, but to be a conduit for the light to spread to the world, that is to be a light unto the nations. Ve'emru Amen, and say Amen, that is then we will all, Jews and the nations of the world, be truly grateful for reaching the long-awaited peace. Amen. The Times of Israel published my new article, Jewish Post-Trauma: The Cause, Diagnosis and Cure. Post-trauma from recurring anti-Semitic incidents, the Holocaust and the pogroms has permeated entire generations of Jews. In Israel, anxiety and traumatic events are part of the daily reality affecting children, adolescents and the population in general. the average Israeli has experienced or knows someone victim of terror or war. Drugs may numb symptoms of this phenomenon, but the real cure can only come from our unique capacity to build a safety net when we connect as a Jewish nation. Israel has the strongest army in the world, yet it provides no immunity from the trauma of losing a friend in combat, or the constant gray cloud of threats from enemies inside and outside the country. Loads of combatants at various levels are exposed to anxiety, from adults and seniors who have participated in Israeli wars in the past, to young men who have completed combat service. The phenomenon, however, is much broader than merely the Israeli army. It includes all of us. We are a nation living in trauma on a daily basis. It is not only due to the permanent threat that has engulfed the state of Israel since its establishment, and not just because of the hidden fear of occasional violence and terror. We are constantly traumatized for being Jewish. The trauma that grips us, from the threatening future, the hostile present or the haunting past, permeates all avenues of the nation. Children attend kindergarten in areas attacked by rockets, breathe hidden panic in the atmosphere, quickly drop everything and run to shelters whenever warning sirens sound nearby, and shiver whenever the alarms sound on their phones that another rocket has penetrated a more remote part of the country. The trauma is already within us, whether or not we're conscious of it. We tend to take pride in our Israeli roughness, the outward toughness. But those who feel safe do not need such armor. They can afford to be outwardly sensitive as well. This is another symptom of Jewish trauma, the need to defend, fortify and play tough so as to not get hurt. Why is this happening to us? Who are we Jews? Where did we come from and where are we headed? What is it all for? What is the purpose of this world? What is our role toward the world? We must answer these questions distinctly, and reach the realization of our important role in humanity, even if it seems like a heavy weight on our shoulders. On the contrary, the implementation of our role will make our current difficult reality become lighter and more pleasant. The prophet Jonah, whose story we read on Yom Kippur, also suffered from trauma. His story, which describes our experiences, began with the mission he received from God, to warn the people of Nineveh to turn away from their evil ways and begin to act as reality requires, with mutual affection. Jonah tried to flee from his destiny. He boarded a ship that sailed far into the sea, and his escape caused a storm. The sailors on board realized that the cause of the storm, which created much hardship, was the dew on their ship. Thus, they threw him out to sea. A whale swallowed Jonah. While in the whale's stomach, Jonah underwent an arduous self-scrutiny until he agreed to carry out the role assigned to him. Afterward, the whale brought him to safety, to the city of Nineveh. The story of Jonah is the story of the people of Israel. We have a role that has always accompanied us, to establish unity among us, and serve as an example to the world. However, we try to avoid this role. Therefore, every time the world suffers from a given crisis, minor or major, it marks us Jews as guilty for the trouble. Also, every accusation we face becomes a trauma that accumulates over and over in our Jewish experience, whether or not we feel it. Our destiny is inevitable. It is the result of rigorous laws of nature written in the Kabbalah books. We must learn them in order to understand what we have to do, otherwise we will continue experiencing amassing blows from the nations of the world. It is correct to treat the entire Jewish nation as suffering from trauma. We should not blur the problem, but accelerate the understanding that healing such trauma depends on developing an upgraded, unified approach to each other and reality as a whole. Yom Kippur is a time of introspection, both for individuals and for the Jewish nation as a whole. We can use the time for self-examination at Yom Kippur to positively affect our destiny if we also agree to realize our role, unite and become a light unto the nations. By raising awareness and working on uniting among each other, we will satisfy humanity's demands upon us and radiate a positive light to the world, as it is written, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh, Proverbs 4:22. Take correction into our own hands. Thus, if Israel are rewarded and take the law of development that their bad attributes must go through in order to invert them into good ones, they will bring it under their own government. In other words, they will set their minds and hearts to correct all the bad attributes in them and turn them into good ones by themselves. Then, I will hasten it, meaning they will be completely freed from the chains of time. And from now on, this end depends on their own will, meaning only by the greatness of the deed and the mindfulness. Thus, they hasten the end. Baal HaSulam, peace in the world. Our advancement depends only on the connection between us, on how close we get to each other. The further we advance to the purpose of creation, the closer we must get to each other. At the final point of our path, we all, without exception, will merge into one single whole, into one single Kli, vessel. This means that every time we must accelerate our rapprochement, trying to rise above ever-increasing disagreements, and thus, gradually we will come to the state of equivalence between ourselves and the Creator. But if they are not rewarded with developing their bad attributes under their own authority, but leave it under the authority of heaven, they, too, are certain to attain the end of their redemption and the end of their correction. This is because there is complete certainty in the government of heaven, which operates by the law of gradual development, degree by degree, until it turns any evil and harmful to good and beneficial as the fruit on a tree. Baal HaSulam, peace in the world. Even if we leave this work and do not study Kabbalah anymore, let everything take its own course, go with the flow, live as long as we live, and die if it is time to die. It will in no way help to shorten or lengthen the period of our development. Whereas, if we advance by the path of light, we will accelerate our development, and, at the same time, we will make it good and kind. However, this is only possible if we constantly establish relationships in the group above our egoism. Without doing so, we advance by the path of suffering, where we will receive all kinds of slaps, kicks, and diseases on every inch of it, not to mention the approaching massive catastrophes. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 14th of July 2019. New Life Number 284. The Evolution of Emotions.
Hello, and thank you for being here with us here on A New Life, the educational discussions with Rav Lightman and Rav Lightmanen, and hello, Nitzan Mazoz. Hello, today we want to dive into our internal world, our emotions. Nothing is closer to us than what we feel, and we want to learn how to feel better in our lives, how we can make the lives of our inner life even better, so we'll be happy, so we can wake up every morning and be happy that we're alive, and we will try to follow our development as human beings in general. What happened to us emotionally throughout history, where we are today, and what the future has in store for us. So Nita, please lead us. Usually if we look at the development of humanity, as we look at in our development, our achievements, we look at our success and how our technology developed, how our thought process has developed, maybe our behavior or the values that have developed in many ways. But we almost never pay attention or know how to observe the emotional development that we've been through. And when we look at our basic emotions, we can agree that there are four emotions that are basic emotions that characterize everyone. And it doesn't matter what the level a person's from, where he's from, and our development. It shows us that these four things are anger, happiness, joy, and sadness. But since then, this developmental process we've been through, all of a sudden we notice other emotions that weren't there fundamentally, like blame and regret and shame, and also positive things like compassion and care, concern for others. Meaning we see there's some kind of developmental emotional process that is developing, and we want to understand, and we want to look at our horizon also, where this emotional development is leading us as a humanity, and if in general this process will bring us in the end to feel truly good and positive emotions more than we're experiencing today. Yes, it's correct. We talked about this in our previous program, that emotions are truly the base of our whole structure, because our desire is a will to enjoy, and we want to look at what fills this joy. A desire is a lack. I want something, and then within that I feel like I want. I call it either pleasure or suffering. So all in all, we have even less than the emotions. We have a desire to enjoy. If I receive what I want, it's called pleasure. If I don't receive what I want, I feel only the desire, and I see that I can't feel it. This feeling is called suffering. So suffering or pleasure, we are between those two. And we are always aimed as much as possible, and it's not just that I want the suffering. Sometimes I want a little bit of suffering right now in order to somehow decorate the pleasure a little bit more for the future. Just like before a meal, I kind of distance myself a little bit before I get it, so that when I come close to it, I'll come closer to that thing that I love, or whoever I love. And that's the basis here. Now, pleasure is a very simple thing. I feel in contact with pleasure, happiness, but sufferings, because I am a will to enjoy, a desire to enjoy, I have many colors, many different fashions. Just like in music, for example. Music of happiness, it's pretty simple. Whereas music of sadness, of thoughts, of problems, of a person, the drama, the life of a person, is something that all of the classical music, all the culture, the ambitions of a person towards the upper force or to the development in nature, and it's meaning the negative things specifically, especially sorrow, fear, anxiety, are much more developed in us than the sensation of happiness. How much can I tell you about happiness? Well, laughter. Explosion, something. We don't have almost any big cultural creations or compositions of about happiness. And maybe it's usually at the end, kind of like a happy ending kind of thing, but it's after like hours and hours of drama and then a few minutes of kind of like a happiness. And it's usually in classical music and ballet and opera. Most, all in all, happiness is not felt with us. Mostly it is the solution for the sadness. Again, happiness is felt in us as a solution, as a good result after we are in pressured states, sad states, after fears and anxieties, problems, and when it comes to a solution, then we feel the happiness. The happiness itself is not felt. To just come to the happiness, I don't know what that is. If I'll get some kind of pill for laughter. But just like that, to be happy, it's only for children or people that Anything? It's like that. He's laughing or something. But really, if something happened to someone, and it's good, or that maybe there's something not wrong with him, that he's smiling all the time. Meaning sadness, fear, anxiety, pressures, stresses. We have many emotions in those. And in that we accompany and lead us throughout our whole life. I'm always lacking something. I'm always searching for something. And if it ends with happiness, then it's really called good. But once again, it ends with happiness. Not happiness initially. Why not? Never. Because our nature is a desire to enjoy. Then I could be happy all the time? It can be a lot of anxiety and a lot of happiness. This desire in you is a lack. And a desire is an ambition. It's something that you want that you don't have. If there's something I don't want that I want and I don't get, I can't be happy. How will you feel the fulfillment? Let's say I'm pushing a drink to you. You don't want a drink. You feel pleasure? I'll feel suffering. Meaning, if you don't have a lack that precedes it, you will feel suffering. When you talk about the deficiency, you mean that I'm lacking that? Yes, a lack. So if I don't feel that it's missing for me, then they give it to me, I'll feel like it's suffering. Can you be happy without that loop? No, never. How? So what, we're born to be sad? When we were born, we're not like that. What does that mean? Nature built us in such a way that we are happy without any reason. When? When we were born. As little babies, children, youth, until we come to puberty, 50, and beyond that, 15, 20. Someone is retarded or has other issues, it can continue for a little longer. What happens until then? We become... It's a very clear definition from anything. We become... Until that point, we can measure when a person enters into maturity. When he starts to care, and it's like this, and be concerned, and this is like that, and I'm missing, and I'm afraid of this, and afraid of that. He's already concerned of achieving the fulfillment, and the fulfillment still appears to him from afar. And from that, he's also in pressures and fears and stresses and all kinds of stressful situations. And before that, no. So it's not worthwhile to become older, to mature. That's right. You look at children, on one hand, you're jealous of them. On the other hand, that's not the essence. That's not the essence. Probably the essence is to attain pleasure, just as they that have endless pleasure that can never stop. But as we look at our life, many sufferings come only sometimes. And how much can you suffer? For hours. And how much can you enjoy from happiness? Minutes. Look at how we are built. The opposite of all this rationality. Where's the logic in this? And as much as a person is more developed, he's in pressures and lacks deficiencies that are higher and higher. And he looks at it and he sees that he's lacking. And he is also in identifying many forms of influence upon him. And then he is under pressures and deficiencies, and that's his life. So, look, in my profession, I'm I study systems. It's a very bad property attribute because I look at dates that have to happen and I'm identifying where there will be problems soon. A system analyzer. And there's someone else that's not even concerned from it. So whoever knows more feels adds more pain. That's what they say. Without a mind, there's no concerns. That's part of it. When you described it, it was very interesting. First of all, I felt that in the happiness, there's something that's very light and superficial, something very light. And in the sadness and the anxiety, there's some depth. There's something there, like some drama. It's not just like that we're such dramatic creatures. We were even looking how to awaken drama so I can there's more emotion. Because without that, we won't feel happiness, we won't feel solutions, we won't even feel life. It's like a feeling like we're creating some kind of personal drama. Yes, all our compositions in literature and music and everything and theater and all our compositions, always drama. And in the end, also, not all of them end like that. And then we're in some kind of crescendo that kind of ends the dark fog, this unknown, the unclear. So really, when you were saying that, I was thinking, what is our drama right now? What drama are we living in? It's like some movie we're living in, which is very dramatic. And now when you were describing the child, I also looked at the child. He's born, he's happy, and he has a rolling laughter, because otherwise he wouldn't grow. Why? Because you put children into a life like ours, so they'll have a mind like ours, with concerns, anxieties, fears, and so on, they won't grow, they won't develop. Why? Because it will truly block their development. What force should I develop if I am right now in suffering? In development, there'll be even more suffering and even more. So the body, the emotions, the senses, everything just locks down. How the children go, oh, and they kind of close themselves. I don't want to see. It's like it doesn't exist. That, in an internal way, we would also close ourselves if we were children, and from an environment, you will be able to remove yourself from any negative feelings. So that's why a child is one who always finds in everything livelihood. He'll take a box from your shoes and will make a bus out of it and will play with all kinds of nonsense, and it won't be enough for me to be happy with all kinds of rocks, and it doesn't matter what. And why can't we do that? Why can't we find livelihood in everything? Because you're developing. Right, we need to talk about, right now we need to talk about the development of our emotions. When we developed throughout, let's say, 15 years, you in that actually go through human development of, let's say, 115 million years, or half a million years. It depends what place you start to define is the beginning of development of man from the ape. And really, the emotions at the beginning were primitive, elementary emotions, just like in animals. Fear, satiation, feelings that are associated with maintaining his body in life and livelihood in an optimal way within it, and that's it. Everything is directed towards the body, towards its existence, its maintenance. Yeah, his family also, and his offspring, his flock. Whereas when we start to develop, the degree of Adam develops upon, of human develops upon the degree of the beast, and it works out that we start to discover in us the nature which is developing in such a way, develops in us new desires, new lacks, that I don't just want food, sex, and family. I need money, honor, and knowledge. And these desires, money, honor, and knowledge, are human desires. compared to the desires of food, sex, and family, which are bodily desires that are associated with my body. So first of all, of course, I must fill myself with bodily desires. That's the base. There's people that even though they've developed and they're in our generation, they can go through the evolution and you can see that they're still just concerned with their family all the time, or thinking about the food all the time. I see the food, the TV screens are filled with food. And there were good channels. There were channels of nature and all kinds. It became a food channel. I like to watch all kinds of, popular science and all that. No, now it's all food. I understand that for some people it's invited in order to sell things, but we want to bring a person back to the way he was previously, truly, so that it would be in basic things and be included in them. So after food, sex, and family come to us, money, honor, and knowledge. This is already desires that are abstract. What does it do to our emotional life, world? How does it develop it? I start to be in... You said that those desires are abstract. Maybe you'll explain what that means, because it also seems to me that also we're getting abstract emotions. What's going on here? Abstract meaning that they're not connected to my body. They're not connected. How much can I fill myself with food and with sex and with family? There's a certain limit. And if I cross that limit, I kind of destroy myself. Also in food, also in sex, and also in family. Because it's associated with my body, and my body is limited. I can't eat endlessly, I can't be in sex endlessly, and I can't be in the family endlessly. Because I grow and just care for my children and my wife, and to many children, many women, and to a palace and many palaces. This is the form of development of a person who is stopped in a certain way. I see that there's people that are just concerned with having a castle, and their desires are very limited. What are our desires in accordance to that? A desire to enjoy from those things, either from food or from sex or from family altogether. Do they have a diversified, broad range of happiness? It's not important. Whatever a person feels fulfilling from, he feels happiness from. That's it. You look at animals. They fill themselves with happiness. Are they hungry? They're hungry. Sadness. That's it. If a person is developed in such a way, then he doesn't need development in science and opening the world and feeling himself as truly knowing where I'm from and why I am and what has happened to me outside of my life. It's enough. Meaning each... According to, also here we need to understand that within the last 100 years, we've entered into a world which is starting to be managed truly by its rulers, by its managers, that there are many people that want to care about what the desires of the masses are, what they're drawn to, what can we profit from it, those elites. What does it do to my individualistic emotional world? That they're working on you, they're operating you and program you to what to feel, what your lack should be, what you're drawn to, how to program you in such a way so that you will want specific things to fill yourself, to give you a feeling of happiness, and you won't want to change your life. You won't want to go out to some war against them. And all in all, you'll be happy. Kind of happy in with what you've got, with your beastly, small, primitive life. I'd like you to continue. You said that after a person has a desire for basic things like food, sex, and family, more advanced desires develop in him, like money, honor, and knowledge. What does this do to him emotionally? Does it develop a broader aspect of emotions in his life beyond those basic bodily things, like you're saying? I don't know, be rich, I want to be respectable, I want to know, I want higher things. What does it do to me internally in my emotional life? Does it expand it or diminish it? All in all, we have either pleasures or suffering, only due to a broader diversity of reasons. And this gives me also a more diverse feel, senses of emotions. Yes, it divides into either sadness or happiness. There isn't. Zero or one. Yes, either I'm full or empty. We're like a computer. Zero, one. No more than that. But it depends on what zero is and what is, in what kli, in what vessel, and what desire I feel. Either emptiness or fulfillment. Either sadness or happiness. As I can't feel this desire, I'm in anxiety. As I see that my desire is dependent on all kinds of things, maybe fear and other calculations and a lack of confidence and so on. Let's say for today I have food and for tomorrow or the next day I don't. There are people that don't feel tomorrow or the next day. There are those that feel, and even though they have today, but tomorrow they won't, they're already in sadness. It depends on the development of man. As much as he feels the matter of time, movement, and place, meaning there are many axes for development. The program we exist in is not a very one way kind of. It's very diversified. There are also connections in above down, also in the different area, in formulas that are very, all in all, it's our mind, it's our brain that establishes the emotion, that stabilizes the mind, the emotions, and navigates us how we can feel it. What does it mean that the brain stabilizes the emotion? It gives us ways how to feel our emotion, our lack, our desire, meaning the emotion is the fulfillment for that desire which awakened. Yes. So if I have a diversified, a big, expanded, different manners of emotions, I have also more desires and also mind. Yeah, and according to what a person wants, his mind develops in order to attain those desires. So what's the connection to the emotions? They also become they're also more diversified. The diversity grows all the time, expands all the time, because they're connected to each other. Also time and movement and place and all kinds of situations and connection between this and that and that. And then I come to a state in which I want to enjoy. But I want to enjoy. If I sit in some place, let's say, on the seashore, and I'm listening to some special music, and under some palm tree, yes, and I'm eating ice cream, and it's got this kind of a special flavor, and very special music, and also a drink next to me, and my hotel, or some personal, modern bungalow, that's preferential, and I'm there, and so on. I can give you now 1,000 conditions so that that's what I think, maybe, so that I will feel myself in good, in calmness. 1,001 things, and it's also connected to, maybe I'm coming here for vacation, it's my work, and my family, and my whole world, and what's going in my mind and in my belly. And a person is connected to the whole universe. It works out in the end that we're developing and coming to such states that today, let's say, we're not aware of this, but I am dependent on the whole world, even beyond the world. We're being scared with all the asteroids that can come to Earth and so on. If the sun is going to flip its polarity and it's going to throw to us some electrical wave or cloud or something. I am dependent on everyone. And to say, what is happiness? What is the sensation of happiness, of joy? All of a sudden, I see that I am connected to all the things, and I'm already in them in a negative manner. And already, if I were to feel at once all the fears that could awaken in me and problems, then I would truly go crazy. But a person somehow kind of works this way. There's a certain protective defensive mechanism which closes my awareness from all the sources of disturbances, from all the negative sources, and then I feel a little bit here and there. I close my eyes. What is this mechanism? I get a little drunk. I take a little smoke with marijuana or something. Meaning people are running away from all of this because we've come to a state in which really the variety of disturbances is so great. It was there before too, but before that I wasn't in such an awareness from it. Previously, I didn't care. The sun, what it's there, dispersing some kind of something from its poles to Earth or something, or I didn't know what's going on in America. I hear that there's the minus 50 right now. Minus 50. It's something that, and especially in Alaska, we're in a plus. Where are we? So I'm hearing these things. I'm in fear. I don't know what to do. I'm in anxiety. It adds to the care, to the concern. Maybe I need it at my home to do some special hiding place and to start preparing. There are all kinds of conservatives and things like that, just so I can, and my own power station. I mean, I don't know, some people are in such thoughts, their concerns. It doesn't matter what one does, nothing will help. Now you start to give me ideas. I start to think dry goods and cans. You already have a thing. No, not for me, but I have a store that I sell, and I'm going to resell it for you there and put it there. You understand how much things are spinned, and it's all in the media. And, of course, that nothing comes there without scrutiny and very clearly directed from above, just so you know in what way it's coming down upon us. That all of this is being clothed in such a way in order to compel you to do actions so that in such a way someone gets rich, someone gets stronger, and so on. That's life. But what am I trying to say? That we today are naked, unprotected from many influences in a variety that is endless. And everything is right, by the way. Because really, they all have the possibility to influence me. Now, the question is, how much really I need to be in this? And the second question is more important. Why I, as a human being, don't know how I'm working with all of these disturbances, all these influences. If I were to know how to engage and deal with them, how to arrange them properly, how to catalog them, this would be something that I would feel myself in a different way. Actually, the work against all the negative feelings is work that needs to be today in our times, as also a social work, educational work, because we see there's children on antidepressants today. They're in all kinds of problems with attention deficit and concentration issues and so on, and they're escaping especially to alcohol and to all kinds of things. And why? Meaning our problem is that we're not taking in a healthy manner our life that develops us in the right way, and we are searching for how we can balance them such that our attitude towards life will be a balanced attitude. Just as we spoke, that you can't feel happiness without sadness, but if they come in the right order, one after the other, then we do feel that flow of life, meaning a life that is worthwhile for us. That we need to organize. While you were saying these things, many questions awoken in me. But one main question that all of a sudden awakened in me, we're talking about the development of emotions. So there's a certain feeling that there's something that comes from within me, which is internal, some internal development, and there's a certain process, a social, environmental, the media, the culture, and so on, which influences me. But it's like simultaneously they're both occurring. Right, I have a system, yes, which is called feeling, and this system is nourished from internal changes that are occurring inside of me, like the embryo that is developing within and receiving nourishment from the outside, but from within inside he has to implement the lists in him, the Rishimo that's in him, and there's a certain influence of the environment which is constantly operating upon me and is surrounding me and also giving me solutions how to process them both internally and externally, and each time brings me new things. I remembered that when I was a little child, the basic things would really make us happy, and also the period of time that it would give us happiness was very long. For example, we would wait for a whole year so that in the summer vacation we're going to go to the Kinneret Sea with a tent. And that was a happiness that you can't describe. A whole year we would just think of what's going to happen, what will be, then we'd go there and the conditions were very basic, a small little tiny refrigerator where we'd put our meats and all that, but it was wonderful. And when I look at myself today or at my children, if I tell them let's go and sit and be in a tent, they'll look at me like, where'd you come from, mother? You came from the moon. And if it's not some fancy hotel or something, and the saddest thing of all is that they receive much better conditions. And it's like nothing. It's like it just passes within a fraction of a second. Yes, and it's better to go back home. And we're bored right away. Something like that. Meaning, what I want to say is that even if, as I'm looking at what you said before, there's some kind of inner development that even shortened my ability to enjoy something. And also my influence. But it enlarged for you very much your abilities for all the negative sensations. Yeah, that's it. I mean, there it's all of a sudden the negative emotions took on great intensity, great power, and we're spending much more time about the concerns and all that. You can watch a TV and see how much that is. So is this my internal development, or is this external, or maybe both of them together? What happened that all of a sudden this time has shortened for me? all of a sudden I experience pleasure in nothing, because our emotions are developing together. That with that, the mind is developing, and the fulfillment is needed as a more qualitative fulfillment, and we're not supplying that fulfillment to ourselves. We're not supplying it. I really don't know what I want. If you'll ask people, they will tell you something that they heard, they saw it on the movies, or all kinds of things. What do you really want? You. I don't know what I want, right? Maybe this, maybe that. Leave me. I don't want anything. Like that. People do not know themselves anymore. That he doesn't know what he wants, what emotion he wants to feel. What's the difference? What's the connection between it? It used to be very simple. I grew up, I had a profession, after profession, get married, the marriage, children, new concerns, and so on and so forth. A person, like a machine, advanced in very clear steps. And there was nothing, there's no flaw in it, seemingly. Who would get divorced? Who would make any changes there? We were much more like healthy animals, like normal healthy animals, when in us the degree of human started to develop. And this is mostly in the 20th century, all in all. Before that, we were like animals. Meaning we developed in a way that we didn't ask ourselves why, what for, why I'm like this. And from now on, it's only to fulfill pleasure. And today we don't supply the answers to our needs there. And what works out from this is that what's happening is... they're in the inner sorrow that we see all are there bursting out. On one hand, I don't want anything. Yeah, in the evening, some friends, we go out, we have a little fun, and then in the morning we sleep, we don't do anything. That's life. But we didn't give them solutions for a different life. We didn't bring them to some new emotions, to the ability to develop their independence and to fill themselves really with some... they have a very deep voids inside, but we didn't give them the ability to open them. And it works out that the youth of today is like a certain box that wasn't opened. And it feels within that there's some concern or some discomfort, but they don't know what to do with it. It's a very, very broad topic. Whereas the solution has to come. I wanted to ask even before the solution, you said that we didn't bring us to the ability to develop new emotions. What emotions? What emotions could we develop in them that we're not developing in them, and that's why they're feeling that inner strain, that inner discomfort? People start to develop from the middle of the 20th century with the question, which is, why am I alive? What am I living for? That question was always a philosophical question. But philosophers, special people, philosophers, different wise guys, and religious people, spiritual leaders, it was never a problem that the regular run-of-the-mill person that would go to work, home, and at home, wife and children and so on, and doesn't know more than that, more or less, or that he would add to this a little bit of music, a little art, some hobby. One was not concerned with the fact that this question of what's the meaning of my life is stopping him from living. What do you mean with the what's the meaning of my life? What for am I alive? What's the benefit of my existence? If I were to exist inside my animal, my beast, and I was in here at Cleveland, it was your beast? your body, food, sex, family. Like for animals. If you only had bodily needs. Yes, then I would only be concerned with that, and I wouldn't think about anything else like an animal. You see, like animals. When an animal, when I have a dog, so he's very happy with that. To sleep, to eat, if there's an ability to procreate. And he has everything. He has no other desires. He lives without concern. His concern is in his body. Animals have no concerns. Yes? When I started to become a human being, and this, the 20th century started to bring this all in us, I start to ask in my subconsciousness, what am I alive, living for? And it's not a question that comes to special people or to scientists, philosophers, religious people, and so on and so forth. It's a question that started to stem and grow somehow and to rise into the emotions and the mind of the masses, of everyone. Even if a person doesn't feel such questions in his life and doesn't identify them, even if it's not that he doesn't identify, he doesn't express them. He doesn't express them. It's a question that's in him, in a blocked manner, that he's afraid to ask. How does this influence his emotional world that he's in under distress? What is this distress? A distress that he's kind of like depressed. Well, it's very clear what depression and suppression is. It's clear, these words. It's in that it doesn't matter what I do in my life, what actions, what things. I go on vacation, I go to work, I fill my family with what I can. And with all that, I feel myself in distress. Why? Because the inner spaces in me, I have such inner voids that I'm not capable of filling. What are these spaces? Those spaces are desires from enjoying from some answer about my essence. About that something that doesn't end. About why I exist. My questions are not inside my life right now. My questions are about the essence, not like my animal lives for 70 years. But I ask, what is it living for? If there's a dog next to me, then it's clear to me, he lives and dies. Let's say 15 years passed, he dies. That's the life of a dog. My life, 70 years. So I'm asking about myself, is there any benefit? No. What for? For what need? What will there be from this? This question comes from within, from my inners. I want or not, I've developed to such a degree. We've talked about the fact that our desire is the basis, that a person is a will to receive, a desire to enjoy, a desire to feel himself. So I have come to a state in which I must give an answer other than the desires of food, sex, family, money, honor, and knowledge. Usually, in the past, I would have food, sex, and family. Then desires came, like money. And also, not to everyone. There were many people that lived by their earth. They have that, and that's enough. Even money is not, meaning not richness. It's not money, it's richness. Then there's honor, which is control and honor and respect. And I am known and I'm respected and people know about me and here also. Also here, most people don't have those things. No, because maybe on a lower level there is, but it's not in every single person. Just like in being rich, very few devote their lives, because most are in advance, not in that. No, it's not that they're in that, but they limit themselves in order to not be sorry. They don't have long ambitions, but it's to not be disappointed. And the same thing is with knowledge. Even less, even there are people who are into knowledge. And how is this connected to... But all these things are in the framework of my 70 years of life. And I'm asking now, above my life, what's the question? Define it and let's check how many people are in. What for? I'm alive at all. But this to me, that question... What am I alive for at all? You described that there's several levels which come to expression into a person. There's a person, such a level that he doesn't feel. Yes, so explain that a little bit more. That he suppresses, and he doesn't want for it to come up, that question. Why? To the point that if it awakens in some composition or some TV program or something, that he turns it off. Why should I suffer? The body does it automatically. Protection. What is he protecting? What should I be sorry about? Why should I be... it's better that I just turn it onto the happy channel. They're laughing, I'm laughing. Soccer or football. All in all, what's the life of some group there, some team there? I don't want to be more than that. And why does this question bring such sorrow in people? Because it erases his current life. Meaning, when I come to a state that I'm asking, so what's the meaning in my life? Then what for should I live? And because I don't know what will be next, there is no reason for what. What for? What are you living for? If that starts, you will see that it's too bad that you opened it up. That's the reason that we leave it closed and locked up, and we don't let that question to float up. Yes, of course, exactly. If I were to open the TV and I would hear you two talking about this, I would for sure pass the channel and say, what a kind of, they're just talking, philosophers and all that. I'd move to another channel because I wouldn't understand how is this relevant to me in this life. This woman and this guy with the glasses, they're talking and it's like I would move a channel. Now explain to me myself. I'm not telling you this in a way. Explain to me what's going on. I'm willing. We see, according to research, and our lady here probably knows this already, that I don't know how many percentage, that I really don't know, but 30 or 50% of humanity is sorry and are in depression because of this question. On all different levels. What do you mean in different levels? Maybe that's the key. Because for me, I don't have such... sometimes you think about it, and sometimes you don't. You try to hide that question. I want here to... Wait, if you were to tell me here... Or, okay, I'm sorry, please. I'm saying like this. This question rises from within me, so I feel something. When I don't let it rise, I don't let it come up to my thoughts. But in my feelings, it's there. But feelings without thought, you can somehow suppress. You can suppress them. And kind of put them down, push them down, conceal them. Yes, you put music or TV, all kinds of things. So what happens to the emotion when it meets the mind? The mind starts to give an answer to the feelings, even though it doesn't have what to give. So what happens in this meeting between them? The feeling asks the mind, how can I solve this problem, this emptiness I have, specifically in this way? And the mind answers, I don't know. I don't know about the essence of life, anything. About food, sex, family, money, honor, respect, knowledge, and that's no problem. Anything that's in this life, that's a question above life. So what does happen? What happens to the feelings and the emotions at that moment? He gets such an answer. There's no solution. So what happens to it? He's in distress, and then he needs a medicine. So what? Some hole, some abyss opens up for him. Yes, he doesn't know what. There's a lack of justification for self-existence. It's a very, very terrible thing. What can you do with this? A person doesn't know. Therefore, we are building in our society all sorts of systems. And this is mostly lately, especially. This is social work and in politics and in everything. Not to let people to go down to such a sensation, to such a feeling. If they ask about this, then many people come that give them answers, all kinds of such answers that usually shock the human society. Where does fundamentalism come from? All sorts of terror and all those problems. From the fact that people are given an answer. You have a solution for your life. You are now killing people, those and other people. Or either you are getting killed right now, or immediately after that you go into the Garden of Eden. And there you have eternal, whole, perfect life. You have there whatever you want. A person is happy. It's a solution. Because this life truly shows him that there's nothing worthwhile here. What do you have in this beastly existence? You're going into the eternal existence. You're receiving now what not? Meaning this question is a question that I need to be engaged in, or is it best that I should bury it inside and not touch? Buried inside, you must do that, but the question is how do we do that? And therefore we see that Olympic games, football, cooking, vacation, tourism, it's endless done for people. They fill a person with 1,000 TV channels, with all kinds of things, just to confuse him so that he won't ask about the essence of his life. And this is the biggest blow in our times, because we've come to a state in which this is the question of human beings. Because it is above our bodily life, that question. What does the body itself exist for? Meaning, someone who is on the body, is kind of riding up on this body, and is asking himself, what am I as a human being that is standing above the body, like on top of its mule? What do I do with this mule, with this matter? And for this, we have no solution. We don't have, meaning humanity doesn't have. So what is bad with all those programs that kind of, they keep you busy doing it? No, it's not bad. It's very correct. Only we see that we can't go against nature. And nevertheless, we are going to have to give it an answer. But for the time being, from between me and myself, we need to calm people down so that they will exist in such a way. Wait, before you say that. Until they find the right answer, the right solution. And not the answer, but the technology of how to bring it to people. How to educate them to receive the answer. What's the answer? The answer. Also the question I didn't understand, but what's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of life? That's the question. Let's say I have no questions about the meaning of life. I just have inner depression and distress. You said, you know what, I don't identify, and it's just deep inside of you. There's a question that's sitting there, an existential question. Is asking, what do you exist for at all? And what are these things? I don't identify such questions. Inner depression and distress, there are. Why? I didn't scrutinize those things yet. But now I'm talking to you, and you're saying inside, like a seed inside the ground, there's a question that's kind of trying to sprout out, that which is why I exist. You know, even though you don't feel it, it's in there. Whether you're aware of it or not, it's in you, and everything you'll have in life, whether you'll be rich, you'll be wise, you'll be successful, or no matter what, it's eating you up from within, and you're not going to enjoy it. And now I start to identify. Now, I want to move forward towards the solution. Let's say Like I'm coming to the doctor. He says, you have this and that. I see it on the x-ray, on the blood tests, in the CT, or it doesn't matter where. It doesn't matter where. Well, I'm not a doctor going to study a study. I just flow with him. I say anything. So what do you reckon? Now I'm flowing with you. And I'm saying, I identified something that I don't identify. You're talking, you're pointing towards the root. Onwards, what do? I have this distress, these negative feelings. What's going on now? After the diagnosis, what's forward? You said that there is a solution to this state. What is the solution that you're recommending? How can I move from an emotional world, which is filled with negative things, to a place that will come to happiness and joy? I'm missing that child that when he was there, he was always happy. How do we do that? How do we practically do that? The answer is simple. You need to develop to a state in which you know the source of life. What does that mean? Where your life comes from? What is the secret of nature? Why in such a way, like nature has stabilized you? What is the plan? Because I know we talked about this in many programs. What are the plans? Why do you need to go through this process in development, in this, from this small spark of energy in the Big Bang into our times and the development of still vegetative and animate and human beings up on Earth? What is this development? What is it leading us towards? And in nature, nothing happens just like that. I want to know why specifically now. Oh, is this question is awakening in me, which is what is the point of my life? Meaning, I need to know and to investigate and find out the answer, not just the answer, but by doing so, I need to develop and to change. It will bring me positive emotions in my life? Yes. Why? Because you'll be able to fill yourself. Just like with all the rest of the things, you'll be able to fill yourself with the answer. What is the point, the flavor of life? What do I live for? There is no question that is more essential or important to a human being. Questions and answers are intellectual. How would it influence my emotional life? No, every question is a lack, and every answer is a fulfilled, is a filling. Only when I know the final answer will I be happy, or even along the way will I start to feel. Even along the way, as I start going towards that, I start becoming happiness, in happiness, because I am enjoying the attainment and the achievement of the highest possible state. I raise myself to the degree, to the upper degree, which is above my life, to the degree of the inclusive nature. What will it do to my suppression, to my depression, to my inner distress? Immediately I will start to feel that I'm engaged in something that is associated with the degree of man, of Adam. And this will give me some great pleasure. Is this a special kind of pleasure? Or there's all kinds of things. No, it's a special type. It's the greatest pleasure. Because in that I attain my root, the root of myself. And what's interesting is that for each and every person, all in all, this question awakens, and the solution is only in that. Our time is sadly over, and it's a very fascinating topic. To attain my root. Okay, thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Our time is over, sadly. Thank you very much, and we'll continue this. And thank you, Nitza. Thank you, too, for being with us. We're searching for the root. We're looking for a new life. All the best.